Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
And hello, and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I am Frances Nesbitt from Crowan Cottages, and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey from Hedgehog Bakery here in Kilkenny. We're live today, Friday, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. Now, we'd love to hear from you today, so if you have any questions or comments, be sure to get in touch with us by text to 086-353-7782, or you can email kitchengarden@corkc.ie. Now, on the show today, as it's we're going to have our seasonal visit to the small holding today, I think, so it's all things small holding. We'll have the usual food news and a chat about seasonal food, and then we'll also have some jobs to do in the garden towards the end of the show. I'll be reporting from last weekend's Urban Garden Festival down in Cork as well, so it's a busy show again today. And later we're going to be joined on the phone by our friend in Wales, Martha Roberts, to talk about her pigs and her business over there and the realities of kind of smallholding and the smallholding life. Mags, how was your week?
Good, thanks. Had a very busy weekend last weekend. I suppose one of the really nice things I did was the heritage walk in Thomastown.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So there was myself, an archaeologist, and another kind of man of lots of local knowledge, led a good group on the Sunday morning. It was just under 40 people, but a really nice interactive group, actually. I think the size of it worked really well. The weather stayed dry, and we even had one of the participants, a lovely man from Croatia, who gave us a story about milling in Croatia while we were talking about milling in Thomastown. So it was really nice. The buzzards flew over the woods for us, perfect timing. And when we were looking at the viaduct down along the river, there was one of those very old trains rolled over it. So it was perfect timing. And
a
really
steam
nice
train went across?
No, not a steam train, but one of the old-fashioned trains. That was painted black. Maybe you've seen it. Apparently it does. It goes every Sunday. And there's all the different counties in Ireland are named along it, along each carriage. I don't know. So that was nice. Today I actually found two strawberries in the garden. Isn't that gas?
Oh, my God.
I know.
Bit out of season?
A little bit, yeah.
No, unless it's one plant that is a particularly late variety.
No, they're all the same variety that I'm aware of anyway. So anyway, they're very tasty.
An out of season treat for you.
It was actually. Yeah. It was nice. It was nice to have something nice. And my puppy, actually, who was normally a very well behaved puppy, but I was feeding geese and pigs this morning, and he just chased one of the hens and caught it.
Oh no.
And there was a lot of kerfuffle with the geese because they make such noise, so I didn't hear it for a second. He kind of had chased it up to the other end of the garden. Anyway, I retrieved it from his mouth, and she
what
has
kind of dog is it?
He's a golden retriever.
So you retrieved the chicken from the retriever?
Yes. Anyway, I don't think he'll do it again. I did have to give him a smack in the nose. The hen has a little bit, she scampered off into a bush, but she has emerged again. She's a bit of a limp, but I think she'll be all right. But it's bizarre how, like, he's been looking at them for months on end and hasn't done anything, like absolutely anything. And he's very well behaved. And just suddenly, whatever way she flew or flapped or something, he just took off after her. And then it was a game.
They get very excited. And he probably just lost the run of himself, like, and went and caught her. Just got carried away with the game, as you said. It's a bit of a dodgy one, though, because if he gets into the habit of that, you can be in real problem.
To be honest, I don't think he'll do it again now.
All right, good.
Too
good.
Soon.
In food news this week, I read a very interesting article in the UK Independent all about ingredients. I don't suppose you saw that. There were some secret ingredients revealed by chefs. This was mostly chefs in the UK. But there was kind of an advisory as part of the article, you know, those little side boxes, which was saying that in the US, the FDA now is warning people against eating food that's prepared using liquid nitrogen, which I thought was funny. And you often see it in Heston Blumenthal and those kind of chefs, and they're using liquid nitrogen for various bits and pieces.
I think it's kind of gone, though, now, isn't it? It was a bit of a fat.
Well, I can see why, because when you read the article, it makes sense. Like, it's very, very cold. Like, freeze your, you know, skin to brittle points and it'll break off. So you can make fantastic ice cream very quickly with it, I'm sure. But then what you're about to eat is, like, minus 120 degrees.
We would have used it for science experiments.
So they're a little bit worried about tiny amounts of it that are left, like, still in the food that you might be eating. Or even if it's all dissipated, what you're eating is minus whatever degrees. So kind of cautionary note on using that as an ingredient. But the rest of the article was very interesting about some chefs' favourite ingredients for adding flavour to their stuff in the restaurant. You know the way sometimes you can just never replicate a dish at home? You know, it's missing something and you just don't quite know what it is.
Butter.
Butter was a huge one. Butter was a very common one. And then there were some other ones in there, which soy sauce and fish sauce for that kind of umami flavour.
Yeah.
Sugar was another important one. So to get the balance of bitter
sugar
and sweet,
and
right, and all of that. Salt, of course, is huge. Like whenever you work with chefs, I've worked with them over the years, it's astounding the amount of salt they use, like by the handful. And of course, it does make everything taste a lot more flavoursome, but it's maybe not that good for you. Some of the other ones, though, that surprised me, monosodium glutamate. Like, I would have thought MSG was strictly verboten, but, you know, having been kind of ridiculed for so long. But no, there were a couple of chefs in this article which said, you know, half a teaspoon of that will really bring the umami flavour home in the dish, and it's gotten a bad rep, so don't be afraid to use the powder. I'm not convinced on that one.
And what is the powder? Like, I know we know it is MSG in that.
Yeah, so it is literally an additive, monosodium glutamate, and it kind of provides a rounding of flavour. So it adheres to pretty much everything that's in there and gives you that umami mouthfeel.
But it's a chemical.
It's a chemical additive.
Produced,
yeah,
today.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm not.
You might just have dinner at home for a while.
I'm not too convinced about that. But there were two that kind of struck me as being really good ideas. So first one might be a bit obvious, stock. So a really, really good quality stock. So if you're cooking, instead of just using like a powdery stock cube, a really good stock, and there's nothing like it. Like when you cook with a really nice stock, you've made yourself fantastic difference to the dish you're cooking. But the last one was vinegar. And I know you're going to be talking a little bit about pickling and so on, so it kind of struck a chord at me. But it's not something I would ever think of adding to a dish.
Well, you know what, like, I suppose we grew up with, you know, that awful malt vinegar that you buy in the white bottle or the clear bottle. But there's so many, like, good vinegars, you know, like cider vinegar, but a good quality cider vinegar, you can actually drink it. Like Highbank make a really nice one, and lots of the orchards and stuff make nice vinegars, and I have actually added little bits of that, not the other stuff, to various dishes over the year, and only in the last actually little while. And even some cakes, I made a red velvet cake at the weekend for the teenager, which was supposed to actually look like a Swiss roll, but she was calling it, she said it looked more like the North Atlantic Ridge because it didn't quite have the roll, it more had a crack across the top of it. But and I used a little bit of vinegar in that. So yeah, there you go.
It was one that kind of struck a chord at me, and I'm definitely going to leave a bottle on the counter now and maybe use it a bit more often, because reading through this, there was one of the chefs was saying that often what a dish is missing is that kind of sharpness, not more salt, whatever, just needs a little bit of sharpness, maybe just to counteract some sweet ingredient or whatever that you have in there.
But some of the, like the cidery vinegars has kind of, does have a kind of a sweetness about it, or that, I'm not sure what it's called actually, but it does, yeah.
So there you go, there's a tip for everybody, keep a bottle of keep a bottle of vinegar on the counter when you're doing your cooking. Now you're going to talk about using vinegar, aren't you?
Yes, I will in a little while and stuff. I have lots of different bits and pieces to talk about.
Very good, okay.
Yeah. Well, we can do vinegar now, actually.
Well, seeing as how we've just been talking about it.
I suppose. I went to see this lady called Dervla Reynolds at Sabre, actually, not last year, the year before, and she was inspiring, actually. She was she presented really well, but she was talking about fermenting, and she has a book called The Cultured Club, which is the most beautiful book, actually, and a really nice book to flick through, and, you know, a book that kind of makes you really want to do it and convinces you completely. But she's talking, it's all, her book is all about fermenting, and you can ferment all sorts of things, all sorts of vegetables and that. Fermentation is one of the oldest forms of food technology in the world. So it's been around for thousands of years, used in many cultures. And it's always kind of native foods that have been prepared and consumed. It preserves the quality and the safety of the food. And the process creates a kind of a controlled environment for decay, but during which good bacteria flourish, and then they act as a natural preservative. And it's a chemical reaction that, or a chemical alteration, I suppose, that transforms kind of complex compounds in our vegetables into more simpler and easier digestible compounds. And these then provide digestive enzymes, friendly bacteria, vitamins, and other kind of readily available nutrients.
So it's kind of starting the digestion process for you.
Yeah, I suppose it is and stuff. It's kind of like pickling in that. Now, her book, literally, there would be every vegetable that you possibly want to, like sauerkraut is one of them, and she's all sorts of different types of kraut. But what I'm going to do actually this evening is courgettes. So, and one thing that she uses actually that I was kind of interested in is she uses a grape leaf, an oak leaf, cherry leaf, raspberry leaf, or blackberry leaf, or pomegranate skin. And it's the tannins in those that actually keep the pickles nice and firm, so they don't go mushy in that. They keep them kind of crisp. So you need to put a few leaves of that in.
Oh.
Yeah, so I think I'll do raspberries as soon as I've buckets them, so yeah. Some leaves. So I'm going to use 500 grams of courgettes cut into rounds, kind of 5 millimeters thick, 4 to 5 sage leaves, a couple of sprigs of rosemary, zest of one lemon, a clove of garlic smashed, and then a brine solution. So that's half a teaspoon of sea salt dissolved in 500 mils of water, and then 2 to 3 raspberry leaves. So you're going to pack all of those into a jar. And you want to leave kind of like 2.5 centimetres at the top of the jar, so for expansion. But you also want to keep a weight on it, so you don't want any air in around it. So,
But if there's fermentation going on, there's CO2 being produced,
yeah,
and you want that to be able to escape.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, okay.
But this is some of them take a long time and stuff, and you've got to actually like open the jar and let some of the gases out. This is a quicker one. So
okay.
I think this is, to start off, this might be easier. So we're going to seal the jar and then let it sit on the counter for 3 days, then place it in the refrigerator to further its culture. And the courgettes should be ready to eat after a week.
Yeah.
But they'll keep fermenting and aging, but they only last a couple of weeks and stuff. This is not a long.
Oh, so it's not one
thing
that you kind of leave in the fridge and or leave on the shelf and it lasts for years. But
no, well, she said here that they this one is just for a couple of weeks. So,
okay.
But there's different ones. Like there's chilies actually that take about 6 weeks to prepare and stuff, and then they'll last for like 6 months.
Right.
So it's the chili sauce actually that she's mad into, like no food waste. So anything that's left over and stuff, she's able to like put it into a jar and make it into something lovely. So it's a really nice book, actually. If anyone wants to buy a book for somebody, I think it's a lovely book. But the chilies, then you need 12 chilies, 6 cloves of garlic, fresh piece of ginger, fresh turmeric, lime juice, sea salt, and pinch of pepper. And you're going to like blitz all of that in a food processor and then put it into a clean jar, making sure you leave the 2.5 centimetres at the top. And then you leave it on the countertop for up to 5 weeks, stirring occasionally and tasting as you go. And then once it kind of has a nice chilli buzz and stuff, you can keep it in the fridge and use it for about 6 months. So that sounds good, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. So what's the name of that book then again? Cultured
the
Club?
The Cultured Club.
By Dervla.
Dervla Reynolds.
Yeah. We might actually give Dervla a ring sometime, have her talk on the show.
She's lovely,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
And it's got huge health benefits, actually. I was listening to somebody else talking about fermentation at something not that long ago. You know, not just for your gut health, but your brain health and everything, for your whole body, actually.
Well, Professor Ted Dynan talks about that kind of stuff all the time, and how your microbiome affects your mood,
yes,
and
yeah,
your mental health.
Yeah.
And they're doing huge amounts of research in that down in UCC in Cork. And he's actually speaking at the Theatre of Food at Electric Picnic this weekend, so I'm hoping to go along to that. And I might try and have a chat with him there and talk about it again next week on the show.
Cool.
Fascinating. And like, there's loads and loads of books been written about this, the psychobiotic effect of what's in your gut and how it affects you.
And actually, that talk that I was at recently, the person was saying that children born by cesarean section are not exposed to bacteria in their mother's
birth
their,
canal, yeah.
Yeah, so that they lack the very first bacteria that they need. So children like that can often go on to develop other problems.
Yeah,
like asthma and those type of things and stuff.
Yeah, it's true. And they're now talking about kind of bacterial transplants from people with healthy gut flora to people who don't have healthy gut flora. And actually, there's a If you listen to the Science Show on News Talk on a Sunday morning, they're featuring that this week.
Oh, I might tune into that.
Yeah, yeah, it's a fascinating topic. Anyway, we better take an ad break. And coming up after the ad break, we're going to be talking to Martha Roberts over in Wales about her pigs and the small holding life and some of the realities of that life and how maybe it's not all kind of photographs suitable for Instagram. But if you have any questions for Martha or for us, you can get in touch. You can drop us a text to 086-353-7782 or you can email kitchengarden@ckc.ie. And hello to some of our friends from Twitter who've been sending in messages today. Fairweather Paddler is driving in the car today, listening to us, I believe. And we have a song lined up for you at the end of the show. But we'll be back in a few minutes just after these.
You can email the show, kitchengarden@ckc.ie. Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
Welcome back to the Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm here with Mags Morrissey and we're live today, Friday from 4 to 5. And you can send in any questions or comments you have by text to 086-353-7782, email kitchengarden@ckc.ie. And of course, Jerry is on reception outside. They're ready to take any of your calls. So you can call us also on 056-7762-777. Now, last week I was MC at the main stage in the Vox Pro Urban Garden Festival down in Cork. Might talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But one of the panels that we had there was a group of smallholders from Ireland and from Wales who were going to talk to us about how they got into smallholding and some tips for anybody in the audience who was interested in producing some of their own food and keeping some animals. And one of the guests we had lined up was Martha Roberts, well-known smallholder in Wales and owner of the Decent Company, but unfortunately she wasn't able to make it over because there was a sick piglet in Wales. We're joined on the phone now by Martha. Hi Martha, how are you?
Hey Francis, I'm good, how are you?
Good, and how's the piglet?
Doing better, thankfully. It's a bit of a long haul. I think that it was a case of pneumonia that had sort of set in quite dramatically, and it's doing a bit better now, thankfully.
Oh, good. Now, you are on the side of a mountain in Wales. You want to tell us a little bit about your small holding?
Yes, so I started small holding about 5.5 years ago, and thought I'd get a couple of pigs just to complement the veg and fruit growing, and that rapidly became a little bit of a pig-based obsession, and now my small holding and my little meat business associated with the small holding is the mainstay of what I do on the small holding. I keep Gloucester Old Spot pigs, which are an old British breed, and they free range on about 14.5 acres of hillside in the southeast tip of Wales, outside a little market town called Abergavenny and halfway up a mountain with a view across the Brecon Beacons National Park to other mountains as well. So very picturesque, but quite a tricky landscape in the depths of winter, for example.
I've seen some very wet photographs on Twitter from your small holding. Not all glamour. Abergavenny is famous for its food festival, of course, and was that one of the reasons why you chose there, or was it a family connection?
It was a family connection, actually. So I grew up in the north of England in a city called Sheffield, and then I moved around a lot with my office job around the country. And towards the end of my 30s, I was having a traditional, quite early midlife crisis. And I wanted to start to grow things and had an idea that I wanted to do small holding. And as a child, I spent a lot of time in Abergavenny because my grandparents had a small sheep and cattle farm there. And I actually now farm on the land that they once farmed. So there's kind of a very strong connection from me to there, because whilst I grew up in suburban Sheffield, I loved being at the farm, I loved being in Wales, I loved the space, I loved the landscape. And so when I was wanting to set up a small holding, that was the really logical place for me to go back to.
Lovely to have that family connection as well.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned in there a job, and like most smallholders, practicalities kind of get in the way of doing it full-time, in that you need to pay the bills and you're not going to make that much money from the smallholding. So you're up and down to London, aren't you?
Yeah, so I've worked for the same logistics company for the last 20 years, and I've moved around doing lots of different roles within that company. But yes, I still work for them, and I am lucky in the sense that I have some flexibility to be able to work from home a few days of the week. But yes, usually I'm up in London once a week, which is a couple of hour train journey from my small holding. In the summertime, that's not too bad because I can feed animals in the morning when it's light and get on a train and then come back again and it's still light and feed the animals again at the end of the day. In the winter, it's a bit of a different story. It's much more tricky because you're then, you know, wading around in usually bad weather with a head torch on and trying to cram all those things in around your day job, or trying to cram your day job in around all the things you have to do in bad weather on a farm.
And then they don't always cooperate. So like last weekend when you had a piglet who was ill.
Yes, yeah, so I mostly have what's called a closed herd of pigs, and which means that they're born on the small holding, and I have a pedigree boar on site, so I have my own breeding program. But because of the bad weather last year, I had my boar was lame for a period of time, and because I have a meat business where I need to keep supply going, I've bought a few animals in this year to cover that gap, and one of those was a sow and a litter of young piglets who are 5 weeks old. And these had been on site for about a week by the time I was due to come over to see you guys. And on the Friday morning, I'd noticed on the Thursday evening that one of them looked like their breathing was a little more rapid than usual, but piglets are always dashing about, so it's not always that clear cut. And then the Friday morning when I had my car packed up ready to come to the ferry, I looked at this piglet and thought, nope, there's definitely something wrong there. Big thumping breathing, you can tell their whole rib cage is expanding a lot more than it would normally, and wheezing, coughing, which are classic symptoms of pneumonia. And so at that point I thought, right, I have to try and get some medication into this animal because pneumonia can really take a grip of young animals, which I managed to do. But it also meant that I knew that I was in for at least kind of 3 or 4, probably 5 as it turned out, days of medication for this one animal. And then in those circumstances, although I had somebody who was going to come in and cover, help look after the animals, it's not really fair or responsible to leave somebody else with that as a thing to deal with.
Now that is a very good point, because I'd run small holding courses out at the cottages at Crowan, and whenever we do the talks at any of the food shows and we're talking about small holding, I see lots and lots of people with kind of rose-tinted glasses thinking about getting hens or thinking about getting pigs or thinking about getting a few sheep. Apart from the practicalities of actually looking after the animal on a day-to-day basis and then sending them off maybe to slaughter at the end, finding somebody to help you and to cover times when you're away is something you really have to consider from the outset, unless you want to be tied to the small holding day in, day out.
That's right, yes. And so when I first started, I had somebody, and I just had a very small number of animals. I simply did it myself, and I didn't go anywhere. You know, I didn't go on holiday or do those kind of things. I didn't mind because at that point it was all very new. And that was okay. And then as I started to grow my small holding a bit, and because of I was still doing some work in London and places like that, I had somebody who would come in and help me part-time and was really flexible and could help the odd morning and evening and then would cover the odd weekend I would go away. But he then went off and got a full-time job in January, right in the middle of the bad weather, actually. And that has left me much more acutely aware of how difficult it is to find not just people to help you, but people that you really trust, who have a real feel for the animals that you have and who take care. Because if you've built all this stuff yourself, you really want to know that you're leaving it in safe hands, because actually there is a certain amount of responsibility that you carry for doing that, and you don't want anything to go wrong while you're away. And it doesn't happen often that I've had to cancel the odd weekend away for something going wrong, but I've certainly had to switch plans around quite a lot, actually, where you haven't got somebody who can help you cover an evening or an overnight stay somewhere and that kind of thing. So it's definitely worth factoring into your decision making and thinking about, well, actually, what happens if you do want to go to a family celebration where you need to have an overnight stay? Who then does look after the animals? It's not always as straightforward to get somebody in to help as you might think.
And they have lives as well, and things sometimes go wrong. So you may have somebody that you trust and you may have them lined up for the weekend and you're all set to go, or you do go and then you get a call to say, I'm sorry, but something's happened, or I'm sick, or whatever. You know, these are the things we need to consider.
Yes, and I had an instance a couple of years ago now where I was away on a reunion with a bunch of friends. I was only about 45 minutes away from the small holding, and I got a call from the person who was looking after my small holding, who was really good, actually. But he said, there is something wrong with one of the sows. She's not coming out to eat. I'm a bit worried because, it was the same last night and it's the same this morning. And I got in my car and drove home, and I was dealing with a case of what's called erysipelas, which is a really horrible thing that pigs can get. And they go downhill very fast, and you have to get meds into them very quickly to try and arrest the spread of it. And I was lucky that I was that close and that my helper knew that there was something not right, and got me back. But yeah, so I then spent the next sort of 2 days sorting her out before I then rejoined my friends for the final day. Yes.
Well, you were lucky to be able to get back an outbreak of something like that. And it is funny that they were able to spot that there's something going on. Pigs are kind of accommodating in that they'll let you know if they're sick, generally by not eating. I've been away and returned to the holding, and a neighbour of mine would be looking after the animals. Great man, brilliant to do it, very lucky to have him. But unfortunately, sheep don't always give you that kind of warning.
No.
And I came back to poor Jimmy being very upset because he thought he'd done something wrong and one of these sheep was four legs in the air. So it's a bit of a responsibility the minder takes on as well.
Yes, it is.
So do you have to be very generous then with the meat that comes from the decent company?
Do I have to be generous?
Yes, with your helpers, do they?
Yes. So there is a certain amount of trade and barter that goes on, and jobs for pork chops and things like that. But yes, I think if you find yourself somebody who is trustworthy and useful and prepared to look after your livestock, then my advice, having lost mine through a full-time job, would be good grief, hang on to them and pay them amounts of money because they are worth their weight. And actually, I knew I was very lucky with the person who was looking after my stock up until January, and I always knew there was a risk he was going to get a full-time job. He was a really good guy. But when he went, I felt it very keenly, and still do, actually.
Yeah. Please come back.
you can always
phone in complaints about him at the new job. No, that'd be unfair. So things are good then, business-wise, with the decent company?
Yes, I mean, it's been a bit of an adventure setting up a little meat company, because that wasn't my original intention. Mm. I was much more interested in the idea of raising my own meat and being able to feed myself and family. And I just got very interested in that whole idea of being able to then earn a little bit more money from it. And it's fair to say that, you don't make a huge amount of money, but it is possible to make a bit of money if you're very careful about the costs that you're putting in at the front end and managing feed costs and also being clear that there is a market for what you're doing. I choose to sell directly to customers online and locally, and that means that I don't pay an awful lot of other people to do things, as far as that goes. So I have abattoir costs and I have butchery costs. I have a professional butcher who packs all of my meat up properly, and I've established a little base of customers. I'm still very small in scale, but a little base of customers all around the country, actually, and locally, who will buy from me every 8 weeks or so when I have meat available. And that's going pretty well, actually. It's a real learn, and what I've learned over time is that the kind of pigs that I have, rare breeds, are often seen as being pigs that are difficult commercially. Mm. Gloucester Old Spots are really, really quite consistent now for me in how long it takes them to get to a good weight. And their meat is really reliable. It can be used for dual purpose, i.e. for pork or for bacon. So I'm kind of, a lot of the time, a little bit ragged around the edges, as I think most people who do small holding are.
Yes.
But
yes,
I found a little formula that works a bit. Yes.
Well, it's good that you're able to apply that. But from listening to you speak over the years, and most artisan producers, the one thing that is immediately obvious to me is that you don't pay yourself. So all of those tasks that you're talking about and limiting your costs and so on, nowhere do you factor in your own time. So this is one of the reasons why I beg people to support local artisan producers. It's because you're buying their passion and you're buying their love, and these people really aren't paying themselves. And if they were paying themselves even minimum wage, the product should cost a fortune, but generally it doesn't.
Yes, and I mean, I think what I square off is the fact that actually it's a life that I love now, and therefore doing that is a byproduct of a life that I really enjoy now. And yes, it has to be saleable in terms of it has to cover its cost and make some margin on top to make it worthwhile. Definitely it does. And I see it as part of a range of things I do in order to pay the bills and live a life that is much more balanced than it was, say, 6 or 7 years ago, where all I did was work in an office and I worked hugely long hours and I didn't spend much time outdoors. So I think it's all a trade-off, isn't it, in terms of understanding what makes you happy, what makes you feel fulfilled and connected to things. And that's certainly been my trade-off, and I'm happy that I made that kind of leap into things. I mean, that said, this is nowhere near the finished article. I mean, I spend quite a lot of time tearing my hair out about how disorganized I am and how am I going to move pig A to position B without there being a major incident along the way.
And tell them that you don't want to be there.
That's always a good idea. Yeah, put up fencing and allow them to walk their way through it. That's it. That's the challenge with pigs, though, and that's the reason I love them, actually, is that they're hilariously stubborn when they want to be, but also massively engaging animals to spend time around.
And very, very photogenic, as you see from Martha's Instagram and Twitter account. And for anybody who doesn't follow Martha on Twitter, you really should. It's at Martha Roberts. And there's more information on her products at thedecentcompany.co.uk. But coming up in Abergavenny very shortly on the 15th and 16th, I think you have a very large show over there, don't you?
That's right. We have a food festival, which I'm now involved with. And I went to the food festival when I first moved here in 2012, and it really inspired me. That was kind of the kickstarter to me thinking I'd really like to be involved in the world of food and food production. And I now sit on the board for that festival as a volunteer, and work at it every year. And it's a huge festival now. It's one of the biggest in the UK. And it's a real joy to be a part of, actually, because it spends quite a lot of time trying to make clear the links for people. So it's not a kind of a festival where you just go and buy things or you just go and listen or watch things. You get involved. There's lots of stuff to get involved in, demonstrations-wise and all of those sorts of things. And a farmyard stage and people talking about production and some really big political issues around food and what happens with food in the UK in the next few years, for example. So, yes, I'm really pleased to be involved with that.
Brilliant. Well, there should be some interesting chats with Brexit on the horizon at this year's festival.
Yeah.
Well, look, we missed you down in Cork at the Vox Pro Garden Festival.
Thank you, guys.
But we hope to have you over again soon, telling your story at some of the food events in Ireland. That was Martha Roberts in Wales. And thank you very much, Martha, for joining us. And like I said, Martha's on Roberts on Twitter at Martha Roberts. Well worth a follow. She's on Instagram as well. And her company is thedecentcompany.co.uk. She's so passionate about what she does, isn't she?
Yeah, she's great.
And it's a fantastic account to follow, like the pictures of the pigs. But she tells it like it is. You know, it's not
she
all
does, yeah,
Instagram
yeah.
moments. You
and
know?
She's great fun. She's kind of like normal sort of as well. So she's great fun to meet in that, yeah.
And the mucky pictures, I think, are hilarious. Or when she gets to London, the story she might tell.
Well, she has the mucky pictures and she has the glamorous pictures. So she has it all going on.
Arrived at the office in London today, realised my face was covered in pig muck. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, actually, what I was thinking when I was listening to her, she should get a woofer.
Yes, actually.
And actually, the lovely Michelle, who I had for a couple of days, is listening in Wexford with Margaret Griffin today.
Oh, so, hello to the woofers.
Michelle and Margaret.
Yeah. Well, listen, we better take an ad break. We were chatting to Martha a little longer than planned, and we'll come back, and you have some more stuff to tell us then about food before we move
loads
on to jobs.
Of stuff.
Great. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
You can email the show, kitchengarden@corkc.ie.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the artisan food retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're welcome back to The Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm here with Mags Morrissey. And we're live today on Friday from 4 to 5. And the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. And while we're here, you can send us any texts by, or send us any of your comments or questions by text to 086 353 7782 or email the show at any stage during the week, kitchengarden@ckc.ie. And a couple of messages in via Twitter about Martha Roberts. She sounds nothing like what I thought she'd sound like. That's the great thing. That's the great thing about radio, though. Like, you can put a voice to the pictures that you've seen. Now, we were talking to Martha there about her small holding and some of the realities of the responsibility of keeping animals and stuff. And one of those was brought home to me during the week, that, like, where you've livestock, sadly, you'll have dead stock. And one of the most famous inhabitants of Crowan Cottages, Pierre the Peacock, sadly is no more. He was taken during the week, earlier in the week, by a fox, I would guess.
Really?
Yeah.
Because he was big.
He's a big bird, yeah, big bird. But it's not the first one. That's maybe, in the 15 years I've been there, that's maybe the third peacock that I've lost now to foxes.
Wow.
So it does happen. Generally, it happens earlier in the year, like if you have a wet summer when their tail is really, really long, because it gets very heavy and it slows them down. Oh, but he'd shed all of his tail feathers, so he was about as lean and as fit as you'd get. Wasn't an old bird either.
And he could have flown up if he wanted to.
They can fly when they're attacked, but he spent most of his time hanging out with Peggy. And I think he was bullying Peggy a little bit, and maybe he got a little bit cocky. And if something came into the field, maybe he thought he'd be able to manage it, just like he manages Peggy.
Oh, I see.
And unfortunately, well, I didn't see it happen, but that's what I'm guessing.
Okay.
So the title of Pierre is a is one that we passed on to all of the leading peacocks. So there's a new Pierre now. Oh. Pierre's son. So Pierre's dead.
Well, the timing was okay then, wasn't it, really?
Pierre's dead. Long live Pierre. The new Pierre has now taken over, and the two ladies who aren't related to him, thankfully, have taken to him quite nicely.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It's all as well.
And he's not hanging out with Peggy, so hopefully he retains his kind of caution and stuff. But it is one of the realities of when you keep animals, whether it's chickens or a dog,
shocking,
or anything like that, you know, their life will come to an end at some stage, and it won't always be with the butcher, you know. It's just something to bear in mind. Other jobs to do on the small holding around this time of the year. So once every season, we, as well as giving you jobs to do in the garden, we talk a little bit about the jobs that need doing on the small holding. And as we come to the end of summer and into autumn, a few things that we have to kind of consider now for the animals as we get ready for the winter. The alpacas have enjoyed quite a lot of sunshine this summer, so they were getting lots of their vitamin D from that, but still probably not enough. So they still need their vitamin dose, which they get every 4 to 6 weeks.
Why do they need that?
Because when they're on the top of the Andes and they're much higher up, they're getting an awful lot of UV radiation that they don't get in cloudy Ireland. So they get a vitamin dose to kind of supplement that, and their diet is slightly different as well. So they'd be eating a lot of herbage up on the mountains that primarily
perennial
when they're in
rye Ireland, grass won't do
they're
the
just
same
getting
thing.
Grass, okay. Yeah. So every month or thereabouts, I give them a dose of a vitamin paste. They don't particularly like it. If it's great if you're able to get it into them without them spitting it back at you and you having to do it again. But I'd also, while I'm doing that, then I'll check on their feet, because their toenails need to be clipped a little bit. Not as often, or as it's not as important with them as it is with the goats. So from now on, it will be a constant battle with the poor goats to keep their feet nice and healthy and dry, so that they don't get interdigital dermatitis or get sore over the winter. Because when the goats' feet get wet and stay wet, they get very, very sore. And then, of course, it's time to treat all of the animals for adult and immature roundworms and lungworms and stuff like that. So they all get a dose before the winter starts. And you want to keep an eye on the ewes. So very shortly, I'd want them to put a little bit of meat on now, because I'll be bringing the ram into them in a couple of months for next year's crop. And of course, I'm keeping an eye on some of the lambs, which may go off to market around the end of October. And the pigs, how are your pigs doing?
Good. One has just taken to not being where he's supposed to be.
Oh.
Yeah. And he, all he wants to do is hang out with the horse.
Right.
And he just comes back for bed and
times.
Food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is it causing any damage or going into neighbours?
Yeah, he's not going anywhere. He's staying in a field, just not the right field. So
right.
He's actually, but I need to sort out the electric fence and keep him back where he's supposed to be, because pigs and horses don't really like get on great, because pigs dig it up and you don't want that. So
Isn't it funny that I had a pig earlier in the year who just wanted to hang around with the cow and or the calf, and now you've a pig that just wants to hang out with the horse.
And the horse has no interest in it.
Yeah.
But it's funny, like, he'll actually walk under the horse's legs and everything. Like, of course I'm doing that, no problem.
And it doesn't seem to, the horse doesn't mind.
The horse just wanders off. But he can't get back in. He can get out and he can't get back in. So yeah, he turns up, but it's funny, he turns up for bed and meals. Like, he wants to sleep in his house.
Right, okay.
Well, so I know he's not going to go very far.
If you
far.
Feed them around the same time, all the time, they will.
Yeah, he's standing there waiting and stuff. So, but yeah.
Now, speaking of winter and evenings drawing in and stuff, I had soup for lunch today because it was a bit chilly. And I see a flask there. Did you say there's some soup in that?
Yes, I brought soup. Loads of courgettes still, actually. And they're still producing, like, there's still flowers. So this is the longest season I've ever seen of courgettes. I think I've been using courgettes since early July.
There's been a lot of mention of courgettes, all right.
I know. Are you bored listening to me?
No, not at all.
But I haven't made soup before. Like, I've made loads of other things. But this is soup with mint and a little bit of lemon zest.
Oh, it sounds very nice.
Which I actually think is quite nice.
It's nice to make a good soup as well. And what kind of stock is in this? Is it vegetable stock?
It's vegetable stock. Mm. This is suitable for vegetarians and vegans.
If you find a suitable vegan or vegetarian to give them. Oh, that is really tasty.
Isn't it?
Very fresh.
Yeah.
Not at all courgette-y, if you
exactly.
know what I mean. It just tastes very green.
But with a kind of a something light in it.
Yes, yes, a very fresh, so zesty kind of soup. That's really nice.
A cup of potato, a cup of onion, 3 cups of courgette, vegetable stock, zest of about half a lemon, I suppose, I put into it, and a big handful of fresh mint leaves.
It's really lovely.
That's it.
Oh, you can get the mint from it, all right, Jen.
You can, yeah, yeah. Mm. So it's nice, actually.
That'd be a really nice kind of starter soup. You know, it's full of flavour, but it's not going to absolutely fill you up. That's really, really
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, it is nice, actually.
Much nicer than the soup I had at lunch, I have to say. Well done, well done.
So, yeah, I actually kind of made that one up myself.
And another way to use a courgette.
But with courgettes, I always think lemon works really well. And mint works really well, so that's what I tried. So yeah, I was quite pleased with it, actually.
And you'll type up that recipe for me so I can put it up at the podcast at the show next Monday, won't you?
Of course.
Excellent, excellent. And yeah. It's a pity we don't have a TV camera in here so people can see your face when I asked you to do that.
The other thing is, I have to actually laugh at my children. Last year, I brought in a big basket of apples from the orchard and stuff for them, and kind of looked at them, and then they said, "Do we have any pink ladies?" Mm. I was like, "Oh my God, no! What am I doing wrong here?" And they just had gotten the liking of the sweetness of pink ladies. So this year, before the apples were ready, I had a chat with them. So they now all have bought. I said, "Like, we're not buying apples that have been imported from New Zealand or South Africa or South America or wherever and stuff, and we've got apples growing outside." So they've all bought into it now. They
good.
Understand, you know, that it's silly. We're buying them in plastic instead of eating what we have outside. So the smallest boy went out to the orchard and picked a few apples for himself this morning, actually. So yeah, I actually feel I've done some good with them.
Brilliant. Well, one of the jobs that people should start to consider now in the garden is checking the fruit for ripeness. So with an apple, it's very easy. You just cup the apple gently, lift it up through about 45 degrees, even 90 degrees. If it comes off in your hand, it's ready. If it doesn't, don't pull it. Leave it alone. And apples will ripen right the way through from now all the way to... Some of them aren't ready until November. And they want to stay on the tree until they're ripe and ready to go. But if you leave the ones that are ripe through a lot of wind, they're going to fall off. And they'll hit the ground. And once they hit the ground, they might still be fine to eat, but they won't store. So any kind of blemish on the apple at all, and it won't store. So from round about now, I have a little label on all of my apple trees, which kind of tells you the month that it's going to be roughly ripe in. So I'll start checking those end of August ones and into the September ones. And once most of them are ready to come off, I'll do a pick, and they go on just a wooden shed, or wooden shelf rather, in the potting shed, where it's reasonably dark and cool, and they'll stay there. I had apples all the way through to the last of them went up to the pigs when I got them the start of this summer. So they'll stay all the way through over the winter.
Yeah.
Any of the ones that kind of fall as windfalls, I collect into baskets, and I'll give a few of those into the pigs every day between now and when they head off to slaughter.
Yeah, I'm giving mine to the pigs. They love them and stuff. And
makes
the geese
difference.
In my house, I know I've said this before,
they love
their
them,
first place in the morning is up around the orchard, and they'll have a pick at what's on the ground.
And the chickens like them and stuff as well. All of the poultry like picking them. My chickens don't really bother with them.
But yeah, they don't actually.
Mine love them. Pick away at them. But I was reading recently, you were speaking about the sweetness of the pink ladies and stuff. It's not just apples. Bananas as well apparently now contain 4 times the amount of sugar that they contained in the 1950s. So they've been selectively bred to get sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. One large banana now, of a particular type whose name I can't remember, one large banana is half of your daily recommended amount of sugar.
Oh my God.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, it is a bit, actually.
So there's a reason why, kind of like even in the stuff that people are, even in the stuff that we're kind of recommending to our kids that they have, there's a huge amount of hidden sugar being bred into them.
Well,
I just
actually
got a bit distracted by a text message which came in there. We might get a camera for the studio. Be careful what you wish for. Sounds like a threat to me.
Actually, fermented food can help to curb your carb and your sugar
cravings.
So there we go.
Yeah, we need to talk a little bit more about that. We did.
We need to get someone who knows an awful lot about it, actually. Yeah.
Well, we talked to
Eleanor Duggan.
Eleanor Duggan, that's right, about that some months ago. But it's well worth revisiting, I think. Now, if anything else there on the food side that you'd like to talk about?
Oh, I've loads of things on the food side and stuff.
Really?
I was just thinking, like, autumn is coming, and also kids are back to school, and it's suddenly, you know, you spend 2 or 3 hours driving around and going to activities, and then the kids say to you, so what's for dinner? So you need to be really prepared for some evenings that are more busy than others, where you don't have an hour to be at home preparing dinner. So what I do, what I started doing actually, is just doing, when you're doing like a bolognese or something, doing an extra batch and putting it in the freezer. So you can do bolognese, chili works really well, meatballs, any kind of like a curry, vegetable curry, chicken, any of those curries and stuff, or pies, make a fish pie, don't do the final bake, pop it in the freezer, shepherd's pie, cottage pies, or what's really handy to have ready from the night before is like a tray bake, and just have it in the fridge so it goes into the oven straight away, and it'll be done in like 40 minutes, which is not too bad. Or another thing that I do regularly during the winter is cook extra potatoes on whatever day you're doing potatoes, and then the following day use the potatoes to do this one pot potato dish. We don't have a name for it. We need to come up with a name for it at home, actually. But basically, chop up some bits of rasher, or you've got some meats left over and stuff, you could put them in as well. Fry those in a big kind of deep pan. Then add in your sliced your potatoes that you've had that are cooked. Fry those for a couple of minutes. Then add in kind of whatever you want and stuff, but let's say scallions and tomatoes into the mixture, and then make a hole in the middle and throw in 3 or 4 eggs, however many people you have, I suppose. 3 or 4 eggs, they'll start to cook. Slice some cheese and parsley, is the general one, put it on top, and then you might want to just pop that under the grill for a few minutes just to let the cheese bubble. So that's a big pot of loveliness, really, to be honest.
And mostly made from leftovers.
Yeah.
And very, very easy to do.
Yeah, so you'd have that done in 20 minutes, I suppose.
And you talk about so that's a big hit with the kids as well. It's
my kids love that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
cool.
That's
an excellent one.
It is.
There's another recipe for you to type up now for next week. And while you're doing that, we'll leave some jobs for other people to kind of do. So we've already talked about starting to pick your apples, but something else you might want to collect at this time of the year is the seed from some of your annuals or perennial flowers around the garden. I leave some of the seed heads in place, so on the alliums, for example, so you get those big lollipop seed heads, which last over the winter, and the teasel as well. I love those. The birds also love the seeds that come from the teasel. They're like a giant, almost thistle flower. And, of course, the globe artichokes, I leave most of those to go to flower, and then they stay on as a big giant seed head. They look very, very dramatic. But for others that you want to get sowing for next year, or you want to save, take off some of the seed heads now, hang them upside down in the paper bag, or give them a shake in a paper bag, and then don't forget to label the bag, and then you can sow those in the spring or scatter them now wherever you want them to kind of pop up next year. Keep harvesting the courgettes and make some of the soup that Mags has already talked about. And now is a good time to take some cuttings from the woody kind of herbs, so rosemary, sage, mint, any of those. And I find with those plants, it's worth replenishing them every couple of years, because particularly the rosemary, that kind of gets a bit leggy and not as tasty. Mint also, so give them a bit of a hack down. And then the best way of propagating them is through cutting, so do those now. And if you've got a glut of any of the fruit, so I know the very last of the blackcurrants out of my place, some autumn raspberries, and you want to freeze them, put them on some trays and then try and freeze them on the trays first so that they're kind of individual fruits rather than in a bag and throw them in the freezer.
No.
It's much easier, Mags. It's much easier to get the berries out than to throw them all in a bag and then lash the whole bag into the freezer.
But
then
if
you have
you're
to go at it with an axe then.
But if you're using
and
them
unfortunately,
for smoothies or something.
We're out of time. No arguments. Do it. Freeze them on a tray before you put them in. Now, we're finishing up now because there's a little bit of music that we wanted to play, especially for the Fairweather paddler who's in the car at the moment. And but you can keep in touch with us during the week. We hope you enjoyed the show. Keep in touch with us during the week on Twitter at Nesbitt for me or at Mags Morrissey for Mags. Or you can email kitchengarden@crkc.ie. And we'll be back at the same time next week on Community Radio Kilkenny City. But you can download a podcast of this or any of the shows by visiting thekitchengarden.ie. Stay tuned after this. We have Maurice O'Connor coming up for his show. But in the meantime, here's a little piece of music for you to enjoy and especially for the Fairweather paddler.
Summer is almost over and I'm crying, but I don't know why. Sentimental old fool weeping for this blue, blue sky. And the way dogs who lick my face and the way I feel for you. Paddling in the kayaks with my sister through the quiet creek. Moon upon the water and the river breeze upon my cheek. And the way my father shuffles with his courage and his cane. And the way September bluffs and faints till autumn falls again. Summer's almost over and I'm crying, but I don't know why. Party for my birthday and a tractor for my 50 years. Swallows at their bird play spin and dive above the new mown fields. And a week in Colorado reading books with my best friend. And the thing I knew I couldn't do and now I know I can. Who could help but welcome autumn and the promise of the winter snow. Still there's something sweet and wistful as I watch this lovely summer go. But the sun is sinking sooner and the weeds have won at last, with the berries on the bushes and the crickets in the grass. Crying, but I don't know.